Welcome to the Leeds Church Institute podcast. LCI is a faith-based organisation for lifelong learning. You can find out more about the Leeds Church Institute by visiting lcileeds.org.
Hello, my name is Tim Hobbs and you're listening to the Leeds Church Institute Christians and Education podcast. This week, as part of Interfaith Week, we're talking to Mike Hainsworth, an RE teacher in North Yorkshire. So Mike, do you want to tell us a bit about yourself? What do you do? What do you teach?
Yeah, I secondary school teacher, work at a school in North Yorkshire. I teach at the moment, I teach religious education, and I also teach personal, social and health education, so PSHCE.
So how long have you been doing that?
This is my second full year of teaching, and then previously did a year's worth of training, but I did most of that training in the school that I'm currently working at.
Okay.
So I've been there for about 2 years, give or take.
So as you've not really been doing it that long, what was it that got you into teaching? What was it that made you want to get into it, and you know, what excites you about teaching?
Mm-hmm. My previous job, I worked at an exam board. So one of my jobs there, or the final job that I worked on, was designing some qualifications for young people that were outside of education, employment and training, and I'd been doing that for a while, working on this project and working out what they needed to get back into employment, and then went and met some of these learners in Bradford, and had a bit of a realisation that I wanted to be the person that was helping people. So I ended up handing my notice in and then starting my PGCE and in the September, but that was the real thing that inspired me and sort of motivated me. And I haven't looked back, really.
Yeah.
You know, it's a job that I wouldn't recommend to anyone, but it's something, it's definitely a vocation for me. I don't envision doing anything other than teaching in some way, shape or form.
Yeah, sure.
For the rest of my career, whether it's, you know, I don't know who I'll be teaching or where or what age group or what subject, but I think it's I think I found my calling.
That's really exciting. Now that you've been in it for a while, what things have kind of been affirmed? Like, what is it that excites you about being a teacher? Like, what are the best bits, or you know, what kind of keeps you going on a daily basis?
I think it's been asked questions.
I
like being asked questions. I like being challenged and stumped occasionally. it's not the nicest thing in the world to, you know, be stumped for an answer when someone and there's a group of students there sort of expecting you to have the answer, but actually showing that I'm human and I'm modelling that thought process as well of being able to think through an answer and
okay,
being able to sort of admit that, oh, I'm not sure about that, I'll look it up, or let's look it up together. Or I find that curiosity to be the most inspiring thing, really. Everyone that does anything will say that no day is the same as the day before.
No.
And, you know, no 2 days are alike. And however, you know, I think it's a bit of a truism in teaching that you cannot predict some of the things that will happen on any given day, whether it's in a lesson, you can, you know, your lessons can be planned to the nth degree and you can pre-prepare questions that you're going to ask and think about answers that you will get and how you're going to move the topic of conversation on and move the discussion on and build on that learning. But then you can't account for some of the curveballs that you get thrown. And I think that's the most inspiring thing, is that students that you teach want to know.
Yeah.
They just have this, you know, on the whole, have this just thirst for knowledge. I suppose it's a bit of a, you know, it's a tried and tested phrase, but it's there in some way, shape or form, especially in the subject that I'm teaching as well.
Yeah.
That there are some students that haven't had any exposure in their life to any sort of structured religious education at, well, they ought to have done at primary school, and some of them will have done and either have been to schools that are affiliated with Catholic Church or the Church of England. It's part of the legal framework in the UK to have some religious education,
but
how that has gone about and what that's looked like in primary school, and then it varies, and it's quite clear that despite all of that, the students still want to know new things and what different people believe and different beliefs that are out there, and taking all this information, and then you can see them sorting through it in their brains and thinking, oh, well, that connects to that, or I'm not sure about that, but what about this? And then they ask you a question, and that's been the best bit, I think, is having lots of questions to answer.
That's really encouraging. And can you think of any specific, maybe encounters is the wrong word, but specific conversations you've had with students with good questions that have come to light?
Recently we've been doing, I've written a new unit, or I'm currently writing a new topic of work on evil and suffering.
Okay.
So the problem of evil, and looking at that. We've done a whole unit on Buddhism beforehand, and we've looked at what Buddhists have to say about suffering and its origins, and we're now moving on to look at it from a Christian and a non-religious viewpoint, and we've looked at some characteristics of God from a Christian point of view, so omniscience, omnipotence, omnibenevolence, transcendence, immanence as well, which has been quite interesting. But I almost deliberately set the little task that we were doing up with a bit of an inherent conflict.
Okay.
So we worked out the definitions of transcendence and immanence, and then I sort of left it hanging and was waiting for someone to ask, well, isn't there a conflict there?
Yeah.
There's been students asking, well, what is the point of evil and suffering, which is the point of the unit in general, but it was quite nice to have, so we've only started the first couple of lessons recently, to have them be asking that question that early on and be able to point them at some of the things that Christians would say as to why we suffer, and be able to link that forward as well into atonement. It's really hard to try and think of like a specific, I'm in the background I'm trying to think of a specific like questions that students have asked. I mean, I must get asked hundreds of questions a day, some more profound than others, and then get home and they just fall on my brain.
Yeah.
I will try and think of one.
Yeah, no, that'd be good. But it's encouraging that, so I guess maybe, for want of a better phrase, in this day and age, you kind of wonder, like, our children, our young people, are they really thinking about it? Are they really thinking about these big questions? Or I know maybe as Christians, sometimes we have that tendency to kind of think, oh, young people just aren't interested anymore, or, you know, other generations aren't interested, society isn't interested, but kind of what you're saying kind of seems to suggest otherwise. So do you want to maybe tell us a bit more about what's life like as an RE teacher, now we're specifically kind of thinking about Interfaith Week that we're in at the moment. Obviously you kind of alluded to sort of some of the real deep and quite heavy conversations and questions which, you know, even as grown adults we kind of we're grappling with all the time.
Yeah.
So what's that like for you?
Yeah, I mean, it's very varied in terms of the content that we cover. So we stick to the locally agreed syllabus for religious education, which is has just been rewritten. And there's some fantastic sort of big questions on there. Everything's framed. So, you know, I was just talking about is about what's the purpose of suffering, and are there any good solutions? And we're year seven, so that's the first year of secondary school. We're thinking about how radical is Jesus,
mm-hmm.
and looking at different aspects of Jesus's life and personality. It is, like I say, it's really varied. We'd look at, have an entire half term dedicated to looking at Hinduism, an entire half term dedicated looking at Sikhism, an entire half term looking at Buddhism, an entire half term looking at stewardship and ideas around taking care of the planet, and what Islam and what Christianity say makes a good steward and why we ought to be doing that. Mm. But which particularly brings up a lot of questions from students, because that obviously is something that is, they want to know what they can be doing in their lives to, you know, make sure that they are making the world a better place and also being a good steward, quote unquote. So it is really varied in that sense, because we almost take a roller coaster crash course through quite a lot of the major world religions,
yeah.
Throughout a space of, you know, 2 or 3 years, and along the way, like, seeking to answer some quite profound questions. Like I say, it is very varied in terms of what we cover and the questions and the curiosities that they will have. One thing I found with students of secondary school is that they have a very intense sense of fairness and justice,
okay,
for themselves and for the person next to them, and be the first to say that's not fair. And then, and one of the heartening things with our students is that it's looking at things that are happening to other people,
mm-hmm.
in the news. We do a lot of work with newspapers, and we'll look and pick apart news stories and headlines and things, and that sense of justice is right there on the surface. That it's not just, you're telling me that I can't do X, Y, Z, and I want to. It's, these are the things that are happening in the world, mm. and that is not fair, and then what can we do about it? And that's the next step that they are all seeking to put into practice, which is heartening, I think.
No, that's encouraging. Yeah, I was just reading earlier on today about how how the different younger generations have changed, and, you know, even down to things like, you know, there's much less of a, you know, drinking culture and all that kind of thing. But actually, students, young people, are much more interested in injustice, in that that's what they want to spend their time doing. So that's encouraging to kind of to hear that they're actually really engaging in not just in what affects them, but also, yeah, what's affecting their peers, whatever religion, whatever background. That's, you know, that's really encouraging to hear. And I suppose for many, not just teachers, but I guess parents who might be listening to this, that will be a huge encouragement to them, to know that their children are quite likely engaging in these kinds of conversations in their schools.
Mm-hmm.
So as we're on the topic of Interfaith Week, is there anything that you're specifically doing in your class or in the school that's going on to kind of represent that at all?
We're always doing things really in a more general sense to promote the idea of interfaith. And
yeah.
We're focusing this week, it's also the International Day of Tolerance, and it's Anti-Bullying Week as well.
Oh, right, okay.
So that's the sort of lead focus that's been taken across the school in general. But in my classes, in my lessons, that's something I've been highlighting to students as well, because it's a transition time for us. We're moving, we finished one topic just before the half term, and we're now picking up our new topics. So it's a chance to reflect on what's coming up in the rest of the year, and which religions we'll be looking at, which topics we'll be discussing, and
yeah.
which questions we'll be considering, and being able to highlight that these are, just because we're looking at this particular question from a Christian perspective, or we're looking at these set of issues from a Sikh perspective.
Yeah.
So our Sikh unit that we've got coming up later in the year is about what life is like in Britain as a Sikh teenager. Just because we're looking at that bundle of issues from the perspective of a Sikh teenager doesn't necessarily mean that we can't also use our knowledge of Christianity or Hinduism or Buddhism and the other faith that we study, and from a non-religious perspective as well.
Yeah, sure.
And consider these questions from the perspectives of what it's like to be an adherent to other religions. I think that try and encourage a lot of reflexivity in that sense of, just because we're talking about this issue with this religion involved or these religions involved, doesn't necessarily mean that you can't also be thinking about or bringing into class, asking questions about, well, should religious buildings be sold to feed the starving? More than likely, if we get to it, we'll be looking at that from a Christian point of view.
Yeah.
However, we will have heard at that point from Buddhist monks, we'll have heard at that point from Sikh teenagers, we would have heard at that point from Hindus. Doesn't necessarily mean that because our lessons are structured in the way that they are, with looking at that from a Christian point of view, overtly, that they, students are always encouraged to bring questions about other points of view and other faiths.
Yeah, so in a way that kind of sounds a little bit like, so in the last episode of the podcast, it was on Black History Month, and so one of the really interesting points that Liz, who we were speaking to, said was about not limiting it to just a month. And so kind of what you started off saying there was that, you know, we don't want to just limit interfaith to just a week, a year. And the same for the other weeks that it is at the moment, like the anti-bullying and so on. Yeah. So that's really encouraging to hear that, you know, there are schools, and I dare say many, and, you know, hopefully even the majority of schools are kind of championing that kind of thinking, that kind of ethos into not just the students but the staff as well. So thinking a bit more about the students, you kind of alluded to a little bit that there is a bit of a mix of faith within your class. You know, what does that look like for you? What kind of demographic is there? What kind of mix is there in the students that you have?
I think quite a lot of our students, I suppose, as is the trend probably nationally at the moment, would probably describe themselves as non-religious.
Yeah.
Our unit right at the very beginning of year seven, when they first come to us, is about understanding what a religion is and what it is to have a religious belief and faith. And we start off by doing an activity where get students to imagine that they've crashed on a desert island. They go through this story and they shut their eyes, and I talk through this scenario and set up this scenario of, you now need to start to rethink what society is going to look like on this desert island with the people that you've got there, and how are you going to celebrate or mark the occasion when new islanders are born. We're really sort of talking there about baptism or rites of passage ceremonies for infants in a roundabout way. What are you going to do? How are you going to elect or select a leader of your new society? Or are you going to have a leader at all? How are you going to do that? And then what happens if and when that leader eventually passes away?
Yeah.
How are you going to mark that occasion? How are you going to remember it? And then how are you going to leave your legacy? And we build it up from this very stripped of religion, of any sort of structured ties to existing religions at that point. And then we build in deciding, okay, so what does this look like for Christians? We examine the idea of the Trinity in a lot of detail, and then we look at non-religious and Christian views on creation, or the start of the world, or the start of life. And through that, there's a piece of writing at the end, as well as all the discussions as well, but through that there's a main piece of writing where students have the opportunity to, as well as compare the two sets of accounts that we've learnt about, they also have the opportunity to come up with their own theories about how they think the world started.
Okay.
And I suppose if you ever ask them outright, not that I stand in my classroom and point at them, what do you believe?
Yeah.
What do you call yourself? But, you know, sometimes get the impression from the way that students answer questions and things, all the questions that they have, particularly when we learnt about the creation story from Genesis,
yeah,
you can sort of work out where their beliefs lie. But when they rewrite this piece of text and they put their own opinion in it at the end,
yeah,
so what they think happened, and some of them will come up with their own theories, there's quite an interesting mix of some Christian views, there's quite an interesting mix of some sort of generic, well, not generic, but sort of spiritual ideas. So that I think whilst a lot of students might well call themselves non-religious, I think it's good to see that even at that young age, they're starting to question and starting to put together like a positive ontology of what they actually believe.
Yeah. Okay.
And piece things together, and whether you know they've got where and how they've got these different pieces from, or whether it's me reading this and thinking, oh well, that sounds like it's partly Christian, that sounds like it could be. So a lot of students will talk about life after death and what they think happens about life after death. Quite a lot of students will talk about in a roundabout way about reincarnation, and I don't know, and it's, you know, from my perspective, that's almost me when I'm reading that mapping onto it, oh well, that's a Hindu belief.
Mm.
But actually where that has come from in their lives, to know when I pass away, I think I might come back as a cow. I'd like to think I would come back as an animal or something. It's, yeah, if you sat them down and asked them, they would probably say that they don't have any religious belief, but then still have the
some kind of
shaping of a worldview that's sort of forming at that point. As I said before, we've had students come from Catholic primary schools that are affiliated as C of E primary schools, Catholic primary schools as well. Again, when I read those pieces of work, some of them will talk quite clearly about siding with Christian beliefs, and you know, some will, you know, we talk about in that first unit as well, we talk about the difference between fact, belief and opinion, and we think about theists, atheists and agnostics and use those terms.
Yeah.
And some of them will go so far as to describe themselves as an atheist or an agnostic, and some of them will have this sort of mishmash of different beliefs that are being put together and still being formed, and some of them will overtly call themselves Christians. We have few students who are Muslim, but I think on the whole it is split relatively equally between students who call themselves non-religious and students who call themselves in some way Christian, whether that's because they've been christened or baptised, or whether they're thinking about going through confirmation or something like that. It's relatively, I wouldn't say 50-50, but it's probably closer than maybe statistics would have us believe about. If you look at the national picture at the moment of young people, I think it is those formative opinions that have been sort of put together, as we say, that being given the option, would you describe yourself as non-religious, Christian, Muslim, Hindu, that even those students might under that in those discrete examples pick non-religious, when you actually engage with them and ask them what they think about different issues, they probably would express some beliefs that probably would fit with other religions there, or just be more in general spiritual.
Okay.
Which, having that thought, I'm making a follow up in my mind, but having that question with those tick boxes doesn't tell the whole picture, is basically what I'm getting at.
Okay.
In a roundabout way.
I guess kind of thinking a little bit more about that, how do you think, you know, for these students learning about these other faiths, how do you think it actually shapes them on their own journey? You're kind of saying about them having these kind of slightly formed ideas, but I guess as they may be, you know, outside of school or in their own conversations, how do you think, or maybe even how do you hope that learning about the different faiths will help them to kind of come to their own conclusions?
I think that is what it is about. It's about fostering, and I see my job as basically putting the information out there, in a relatively dispassionate way.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, I have to be passionate about my subject to teach it and engage students and want to get them interested in the topics. But then it then becomes an over to you. So here's what we've learnt about. You can, you know, these might be topics that you don't think about for another 5 or 10 years in a really structured and formal way.
Yeah, yeah.
But I think having a wide-ranging and rigorous religious education will be something that sets our students up for the rest of their lives, really. So being able to go home that night and have a conversation about what we've discussed about in class with someone at home, and then carry that conversation onwards and think about it when they get up the next morning, but also in 5 or 10 years' time and think about, oh, we did something like that at school. Ah, I wonder. Or being in a job where a new member of staff joins a team who is someone from, who is a, who is a Buddhist or a Hindu, and then being able to draw on that knowledge, and at that point it will be in the, you know, the deepest recesses of their brain, but to draw on that and actually have some empathy and understand the beliefs and the practices that person will be undertaking on a daily basis, but actually why as well. I hope that it's those sorts of lessons that later on in the future they will look back on and think that will be something that sticks with them.
So you've already spoken quite a bit about what faith discussions are like in class. Do you ever have any debates? How do you referee or mediate those kind of things? If you do have them, that is, obviously.
Yeah, well, we do quite often. Within any group of 27, 28, 29 teenagers, there's going to be a range of opinions, especially when we're talking with about some of the issues that we're talking about, we're tackling sort of the big questions in life. And you know, some students will have come from a faith background at home and take the beliefs that they have and that they've perhaps been taught about seriously, and so do students that would call themselves atheists would also, you know, take that seriously as well, and everything in between. I think it's about setting up those expectations right from the very start and highlighting that it is okay to disagree. That is one of the reasons why we're in that classroom at that time. Isn't to all, you know, look at something on the board and all nod and say, yes, that is the truth. That's not what religious education is about or should be about.
Sure.
Those disagreements are actually the building blocks and the foundations for some of those thought processes and conversations and things in the future, but they just have to be done in the right way. And I think that is, once you set up the idea that it's okay to have disagreements and debates, then generally speaking, they all seem to be done in the right way.
Okay.
I think if you go in, not that this has happened, because so those expectations have been set up. I suppose the danger is that if you didn't set up those expectations in the first place, that the first time a disagreement happens, it's a big thing.
It's a bit of a free-for-all then.
Yeah. We try and build in activities very early on and quite regularly where disagreement is the point.
Yeah, okay.
And sort of try and manufacture situations in which we have disagreements and try and make them about relatively petty things and small things, so that when we get to tackle the really big questions, we've gone through that process, we know what a good disagreement and a good debate and a rational argument should look like.
Yeah.
So I think it's about that. It's trying to set the conditions up and set the expectations up, and then it sort of becomes a natural process from that point. I think if you have an open environment and a safe space to discuss and disagree, I've generally found that students buy into that as a concept and an idea, and then they're all bought into it and you don't really tend to have any problems.
There's a couple of things you've said there that really kind of really make me think about how we do things in church, whether that's my church or your church or wherever.
Mm-hmm.
So one thing is that kind of thing of not, you know, so they're not just, you know, in church, we're not just sitting there nodding and agreeing. It's like, right, yep, okay, no questions here, sir, sort of thing. But actually to, you know, not necessarily seek to kind of, I'm trying to think of the best way to say it, but, you know, seek to kind of kick off and disagree for the sake of disagreeing.
Mm-hmm.
But actually to kind of formulate ways of saying, like, okay, well, I need to go away and think more about this. And, you know, learning from how schools, I guess, have maybe always done it or maybe do it better now in terms of providing that structure in which, and like you say, a safe space as well,
mm-hmm.
where people feel like they can do that and also where they can be equipped to do that. I mean, one of my questions was going to be, how can schools or even what can schools do to encourage healthy faith discussions, but it kind of seems like that's already happening. So maybe a better question is, how can we outside of schools and universities be encouraging healthier faith discussions, do you think?
I think a lot of it is to do with the fundamental attitude that you have.
Okay.
I mean, there's no getting around the fact that I am, you know, as a teacher, I am the one person in the room that's almost in charge of setting the content and planning the lesson.
Sure.
And, you know, there's a lot of things that I am responsible for and in charge of, and recognising that that is sometimes or could be a hindrance to some of the upper learning that some students might get more out of.
Sure.
And recognising that and actually taking a step back sometimes and making some time and space to have those discussions and recognising when they're appropriate. That's what it's all about. It's not an inconvenience.
Okay.
To have those discussions, and it's not a hindrance to your perfectly planned lesson and discussing this particular question that someone has is probably the best use of my time at that particular moment. Within church families and things, the allegory of that might just be simply actually making time to have an open, you know, forum for discussion about theological positions or the particular sermon series or the themes that are coming up, and actually having the attitude that those questions and those discussions aren't a hindrance to the church's business.
Yeah.
That we've decided we're doing a sermon series on this and we're taking this position. Actually, a lot of good and a lot of growth can come from having those discussions.
Well, I think you kind of hit the nail on the head when you said about attitude, really. I think that is, you know, whether it's what we personally or our young people are, you know, it's not just about what we ourselves are taking away from things, but also our attitude to how we are sharing those things with one another, and how we kind of, whether that's mediate or facilitate, whatever words you want to use, those kind of vehicles for further discussion. And, you know, even talking to you now, it kind of makes me think, oh, how often do I actually do that when, you know, I'm talking to the young people in church and the youth that my wife and I help out with? You know, how many opportunities, you know, do we often just assume that they just don't want to talk about it and they're just there to kind of have a laugh? And but actually, kind of what you're saying, and, you know, definitely the impression you've given off is that they are interested, and actually maybe as adults, and because we're awkward and British, that we can, you know, we shy away from that. And, you know, I guess my hope moving forward is not just for myself, but, you know, for my church and churches and schools all around, is that we keep doing that. But as we kind of look towards coming to a close, I'd be really interested to kind of know for you and yourself, in terms of your own faith, do you think that teaching in and of itself, and also teaching other faiths, how do you think that's grown your own faith?
In terms of its impact, it has been probably the single biggest sort of driver in terms of moving my sort of faith journey forward, I think, really.
Yeah.
Realising that this was something that not only I enjoyed and not only that I was good at, but also something that I see as a calling, has been really affirming to me. And I think it's also helped me really, really recognise and realise the value and the value of questioning. I think having that attitude with students and being open to questions, and actually seeing the impact, the positive impact that's had on their learning and their development, not just as you know, learners of content, but also, you know, young people who are growing up, that actually applying that to my own life has made me realise that there is a value and it is okay to question aspects of theology or aspects of my faith. And just like I would have no problem with, you know, a student stopping my entire nicely planned lesson and asking a relevant question, I also and wanting to hear the response and wanting to have a two-way discussion and wanting to and, you know, also wanting to have them also wanting to have other people involved in that discussion as well. I think that has had an impact on sort of freeing myself to, or me feeling like it's okay to question in that way, and that, you know, God doesn't have a problem with that.
No,
that those open-handed issues are described as open-handed and are open-handed because for a reason, and going in with the right attitude and aspect of questioning and asking, and also being, you know, okay if there isn't an answer.
Yeah.
Okay. If the, you know, if they're just like I, as a teacher, I'm quite happy to, you know, sometimes either divert the question and say, well, "What do you think about that?" Or I'm sure you can maybe work that out on your own if it's a specific, you know, knowledge question they're asking that I know really they know the answer to.
Yeah.
Rather than a high-minded question, and that I am okay with asking questions and not necessarily getting answers and working them out later.
Yeah, and accepting that there's a process
to
the thing, and that process might not be immediate.
Might not be immediate, might not be structured. Yeah. And in some ways, there is the value it is in that process sometimes. Yeah. And it's also, I mean, teaching other, I think the other part of your question was about teaching other faiths as well.
Mm.
I think that is so valuable for me to understand the diversity of and range of religious beliefs, and it's helped. It sounds strange to say that it's almost affirmed or cemented my faith, because I've not looked at the beliefs that I've been teaching from Buddhism or Hinduism and thought, those are all rubbish, I was right the first time. But I think it just has, it's had that impact where the questions that I've been wrestling with and the answers that I've, the conclusions that I've drawn personally on those open-ended issues and the faith that I have underlying it all is Christian as opposed to something else.
Yeah.
Not that there is a negative aspect to those other faiths. And it's been so interesting for me to be able to articulate those different points of view, and almost when I'm describing the views of Hindu or a Sikh, because it's not possible every single time to have an individual person from a different faith come in and speak directly to the students. Sometimes it's not practical, so sometimes that onus is on me to describe it or use video clips and things. But to inhabit and really try and articulate in quite a passionate way the beliefs of different people around the world and inhabit that and do it and not do it a disservice, has been really good as well, in a sort of roundabout way. That, yeah, I think as well, it's been really good to leave my own faith at the door when I walk into the classroom. I think hearing from people of different perspectives, and realizing that ostensibly I am another Christian RE teacher.
Yeah.
And trying to work around that and find ways in order to work around that particular aspect of my personality.
Yeah.
And try and leave that at the door has really sort of challenged me sort of creatively in my teaching practice, but also has been, you know, challenging and has grown my faith as well.
Yeah.
I think I would have been so annoyed if I was, when I did RE at school, if I'd have been robbed of the struggle to work out what I believed. If I had an RE teacher that had, you know, just given me a list of beliefs and teachings and practices and said, this is what we believe.
Yeah, that's it.
As a society. We're a Christian society, have been for how many hundred years, and these are the things that, you know, these are the values that are inherent not only in Christianity but also in our country, and you either like it or lump it.
Yeah.
And there hadn't been a discussion about other faiths, or there just hadn't been other possibilities put out there, and those debates were shut down before they even, you know,
got a chance to get going.
I would have been so annoyed to have been robbed of that struggle to work out what I believed and things, that I won't dream of doing that to students, even if it was a possibility. I just, I think giving these students the tools and the knowledge and the understanding to work out what it is that they believe, whether it's now or later or never, is the thing that has probably had the most impact on my faith. That I have found what I'm supposed to be doing, and it's this. It might sound weird that I'm there to teach five other world religions as well as the one that, you know, I go home and, well, I'm always practicing, but that I practice, and that has been the best bit, I think.
So yeah, that's really encouraging. So I guess as we finish up, how can we be praying for you, for your students, and for your school?
At the moment, there seems to be nationally there is a huge mental health crisis in young people. The statistics, if you look at them, are shocking.
Okay.
In terms of the incidence of mental health problems and issues that young people are facing, I think the issues that they're facing in general are unprecedented.
Yeah.
Coupled with the cuts to child and adolescent mental health services across the country, I think those issues are increasing and, you know, becoming more prominent, but also the help is just not there.
Yeah.
Which I think is a, you know, an issue that we probably need prayer on.
Yeah,
some intervention on, because I think our highest, and I dare say it's the same in a lot of schools around the country, probably our highest category of need in terms of special educational need is social, emotional, and mental health issues.
That's interesting. I hope that whether it's other teachers listening to this or other people who aren't in education listening to this, that, you know, we would all encourage teachers to keep going, and that you do a fantastic job. So it would be good to pray as we finish up. So we'll pray for these things and send you on your way. So Heavenly Father, thank you for today. Thank you for Mike and for the person that he is. Thank you for the vocation, the calling that you've brought him into. Father, thank you that you love him, that you encourage him and so many other teachers and Christians to ask these questions, to not just sit back. And Lord, I pray that we would all continue to do that, that some of us would start to do that. And Father, we pray for our young people. Pray for the young people in our schools who have so many fantastic questions, and Lord, may they never stop. Father, we pray for the mental health situations in our schools, in our society. Lord, that you would be aiding the schools and the mental health services and the government to provide good quality care. Father, I'd be praying for our young people, Lord, that you put their minds at ease, that they don't have to look a certain way or conform to the way that other people want them to look like and other ways people want them to be. But Father, that you'd encourage them to be their own person. And Father, that as the church, as their teachers, as their parents, Lord, that we would be there to guide them, to support them, to encourage them more than anything. And Father, do pray for those who are supporting them, who do work in mental health, Lord, that you would be helping them with their resilience and their perseverance to keep going. And Lord, we do pray for our government in this difficult time with so many different things going on. But Lord, that you'd help them to protect our future generations, that you would be helping them to resource these services well, that we'd be providing those opportunities for young people and adults as well to get the help that they need. Father, that we wouldn't be withdrawing them from those opportunities to get help when they need it. And so Lord, I just pray that you bless Mike, bless these young people, bless all of our schools in the great work that they do, and help us all to encourage them to keep on keeping on. In Jesus' name, amen. Thanks, Mike.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the Leeds Church Institute Christians in Education podcast, and this week we've been talking about Interfaith Week with Mike Hainsworth. Don't forget to listen back to the last episode where we talked to Liz Mitchell as part of Black History Month.